Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Ready to roll into savings? Visit Dave Gill Chevrolet at 4700 East Broad Street in Columbus, your hometown Chevy experts. Right now, take advantage of tariff-busting deals on some of our most popular models. Experience the bold new 2025 Silverado 1500 with its powerful V8 engine and cutting-edge tech. Or discover the all-electric 2025 Chevy Equinox EV for an eco-friendly commute without compromising style or range. Looking for value? Browse our extensive inventory of certified pre-owned vehicles. From sporty coupes to family-friendly SUVs, each rigorously inspected for your peace of mind. Cruise over to Dave Gill Chevrolet or visit us online today at DaveGillChevy.com and drive home happy.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit VoicesOfWrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This week in the news, the annual post-WrestleMania culling is upon us. And the lazy river of wrestling criticism. Oh, God, that Raw show and the bad promos by everybody who was a professional wrestler, and the good promos of the people who aren't full-time wrestlers. I guess I'll go with that as our lazy river tease. And Invader Club this week from 1993 All Japan. Kobashi and Misawa versus the Big Boss Man and Steve Dr. Death Williams. How'd I ever get there, Chris, after my Steve Dr. Death Williams tirade last week? I don't know, but it was an interesting as hell match. I'm Jeff Hawkins. He's Chris Novembrino. How did I get there?
I don't know. This slanty cam video really captured your attention, though.
Still fun. I mean,
no, it is, and it's fit Misawa.
Yeah,
it's always fun.
Oh, so let's go into the general health update for me. This week I had another birthday. Another year has passed. Too old to be doing these dumbass wrestling podcasts, but here I am. April 30th, I took the day off because I had my 3-month post bladder cancer operation cystoscopy. Good news and bad news. Good news, cancer free still, nothing recurring, nothing starting to build in there. So that's a good thing. Bad news. Guess who went to shock again, this time having no medication in any form whatsoever. Just 5 minutes after the procedure, I'm starting to get the itching, starting to get the hives, starting to heat up. Yeah, that's right. Anaphylactic shock. Here we come. And the nurses this time, I have my EpiPen with me just in case, because I'm paranoid about this stuff now. It appears I have a right to be. So they're just watching me and my blood pressure lower, and they put me in an angle so blood rushes to my head, and they're just kind of watching. And I'm maintaining consciousness the whole time. And so I just remember one of the nurses, should we give him an epidural? No, he brought his EpiPen with him. Let's just watch and see what happens, even though they can't find my pulse twice. And then they have the temerity to say, you know what, this is the third time this has happened, Mr. Hawkins. Maybe next time you should just do this in a hospital. Check yourself in so that they can monitor you, perhaps overnight. I'm like, you want me to just spend all this money? And you guys are just incurious. My doctor comes in, thinks it's a nerve reaction for some reason, like due to trauma. Because it's like, well, the trauma of going past the prostate triggered your, there's some nerve endings. I go, this has to be an allergy, right? This has happened three times in a row now. It's not just my nerves are reacting to some sort of trauma. That wouldn't break me onto hives. So I have to be Encyclopedia Brown. Go find an allergist who will test me for this stuff, which is almost, it's almost impossible to find these types of doctors out here because everybody just wants to do, you know, the asthma and allergies to your environment type stuff. And I have to go find if I'm allergic to iodine, lidocaine. I think it's the disinfectant that they're using on the cytoscope because I found a white paper saying that there's certain people who have anaphylactic shock in very rare cases to that. So I'm thinking that's the culprit. Perhaps latex, but I've never responded poorly to latex before. But it just shocks me how incurious the doctors and the nurses at this clinic are to finding out why the hell I keep almost dying every time I come into their care. So physically, I'm okay after a day of rest. Mentally, completely broken. And I sound high energy right now, but it's all a fraud. I have been mentally broken for the past 2 days in a state of absolute despondent depression that I'm currently making up for with a cheerful radio voice. I don't know. Chris, how was your week?
Well,
that. Follow that, Dolph Ziggler says as he comes through the curtain.
All right. Well, I can't top it. It's certainly been a mixed bag. So my cat Hazy is in her 20th year now, and she's been dealing with a cyst that has been forming over her eye. And like my vet down the street here has been a little hesitant to do anything to remove the cyst because she's starting to have kidney disease and it's slow developing, and she's 20. It's pretty much that, and a little bit of arthritis is all she's got for the cat equivalent of 96 years old. So we're okay over here. And I've been getting her weighed up. I've been giving her wet food in addition to, we changed her diet out and everything, but they don't want to do the surgery until she's in a little bit better health. And then the doc was like, well, we're going to send you over to this other vet that has an anesthesiologist and we think might be a better fit for the procedure. Well, I called up that doc or that vet this week, and they wanted three times what I had paid for the consult the day prior for another consult. And I even said on the phone, I was like, I just had a consultation yesterday and it was X amount of dollars, and you want literally 3X that today or tomorrow for this. And then you still don't have a number of how much the procedure is going to be. So we're looking at like four figures. I ended up having to circle back to my vet. We're going to get her in here in a couple of weeks. This whole thing's just been, it's been a stressful process, and the whole time, like, the cyst has been growing, so it's been kind of stressing me out.
That's going to be a happy show.
Yeah, you know, like,
well, we're starting with firing, so get ready here.
Well, real quickly, too, I just wanted to say, I like sunrises.
Tequila sunrises or just
no
sunrises?
No, I don't drink anymore. I'm just saying you're asking me, you know, like for a happy thing, and you know, I like sunrises.
Children laughing, that always gets me. I like
I don't know about that after shit, but like I like a snowflake or something.
What's
like
wrong
that
with you? What? Anyways, what is wrong with you?
But nothing's wrong with me. I'm doing well.
Okay, fine. I'm not. Starting with, yes, the post-WWE releases have started. NXT, it's always harder to confirm because they don't officially announce those. So Sean Ross Sapp is currently on the case. I'll be following him. But right now, what we do know on the main roster, some of these may be people who are not getting re-signed. They may not be outright releases. But right now, what we know, Dakota Kai, Braun Strowman, Shayna Baszler, and Caden Carter, Katana Chance from the main roster from NXT right now. The ones that seem to have been confirmed are Cora Jade, Riley Osborne, Eddie Thorpe, Gigi Dolin, and Jakara Jackson. If you watched that NXT show on Tuesday, it felt like they were ending a number of storylines / stables. Oh, adding to this, Gallus has been released by WWE after basically getting sent to their developmental to do angles with some of the kids in there. Mainstay of NXT UK as well. So where do you want to start with this? I think Dakota Kai, man, hers is just timing all across the board, because like if she had been signed instead of Bayley, she'd be one of the horsewomen right now. She was always reliable. She was always just tough as nails until she'd get injured. But I mean, she was doing ladder matches the week before War Games, or War Games match, or the War Games turn being one of the great turns in WWE and especially NXT history. Got brought back after initial cut with Damage Control. Got hurt while she was in Damage Control. Only got to hold the tag titles with other people. Always got teased for an individual title, but never really got it, including the mid-card titles, which kind of sucks. Strowman, you know, big. Could do a run in All Japan right about now. But, you know, his thing was being big and mobile.
Kind of lost that.
He had kind of lost his fastball a little bit.
He's a diminishing returns guy.
Shayna Baszler is both simultaneously outkicked her coverage and was underutilized. It's an amazing thing with her because when she was signed, she was late 30s, had basically was doing professional wrestling for kind of fun, training with like Eddie Robinson and Josh Barnett. Gets picked up by the WWE after the Mae Young Classic, gets an absolutely phenomenal character as NXT champion, just being this killer in this world of pretty girls and whatnot, and just, you know, breaking arms and all these other things, unrepent MMA type. Then gets brought up to the main roster and she gets raccoon makeup and she's biting Becky Lynch's neck. That's how Vince saw her. I mean, you just like, what the hell are you doing? Looked like they were coming up with something with this MMA stable with
Sonya Deville and
Sonya Deville and Zoe Stark.
Zoe, yeah.
And then that turns into a big thing of nothing. Caden Carter and Katana Chance, too small for the main roster. Never really used to their potential because they don't like small people. It's a problem with Roxanne Perez right now. They always make those people heels because who would believe they could kick ass? But they, I mean, like, especially Katana Chance. I mean, how do you, they never bought into the America, what is it, the American Ninja, what's the name of that TV show? It was like the number one show in the country.
Yeah, American Ninja Warrior?
Yes. That she won. And you know, it's like, dude, she's a freaking celebrity. She's an awesome athlete. Caden Carter's not a bad athlete. They were doing great tandem stuff as a small team. And
but they also just had no character for
no character
people.
Either. They
ever,
danced. They
ever.
Were best friends and they liked ooh-wah, to party. Ooh-wah. Glow Starks, glow sticks and what. Yeah, I would agree. They just never fleshed out anything for them.
Yeah, it was ooh-wah, ooh-wah.
Ooh-wah, ooh-wah, ooh-wah. Yeah.
Ooh-wah, ooh-wah.
On the NXT side, Cora Jade. Look, I liked Cora Jade originally, and then she started making body changes to herself because I think because of the Sky Blue thing. She was in part of that CM Punk Bayley has a posse thing. Then she just kept getting knee injuries all the time and other injuries. And it
but I like
really...
her as a promo. I thought she actually got better yes! and better as a promo.
Yeah, because she used to have like the WWE cadence promo where you'd say like three words at a time. And then eventually when they let her talk, she was great.
Her most recent promos have actually been quite good, which is this is another one that to me, I'm not a huge Cora Jade fan. I'm kind of disappointed on this one.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things, once they turned her heel, you know, then they didn't have a way to turn her back. Because, like, the skater girl thing with her was fine, even though people would trash her and stuff like that. But in WWE, it was working for her. And then she became, like, the, you know, she became Roxanne Perez's id. And now that's being done by Julia for the most part. So, I mean, they have a, you know, they have an upgrade on a team and they don't really need her anymore. Riley Osborne. He's the deaf kid, right?
No.
He's proto Orton.
You're thinking of the same person. That's Miles Bourne.
That's Miles
Bourne.
Okay.
Riley Osborne was in
Chase U.
Chase U.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Now I get those two mixed up all the time. Okay. And now with Chase U being reborn as Chase Community College, I guess, because there's nobody that's in that group right now that's that has half the charisma of Thea Hale.
All right, man, it's turning into Mr. Chase's detention hall at this point.
Oh yeah, this is the Breakfast Club with like nobody who's interesting. It just gives him the chance to reboot and cuss at kids, which is fine.
I guess. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's better than nothing. Is it better than nothing? Is honestly my question at this point.
Eddie Thorpe. Once again, the white man taking the Native Americans.
I gotta tell you, like, NXT did Native Americans kind of dirty here with this Eddie Thorpe thing, where they
good lord
half-assedly presented this guy, and the most they could come up with is sort of this reverse racist angle where, like, white people are always taking stuff from him. And that's why he needs to get all these belts, and then he loses all time and again, and then he's cut and he's fired. Cool.
They didn't even do this poorly with Tatanka, which almost turned into like they drink and they gamble a lot type of stuff, you know, with him. But
yeah,
it was. I mean, I remember when Eddie Thorpe signed. AEW fandom was very angry because he was part of that New Japan Dojo crew that was kind of with he was part of the War Dogs, part of the Bullet Club in New Japan. They're like, oh, they're gonna waste you over there, whatever, come to AEW. And I was like, but you know, he has a chance here because he's not just plain wrestler who has good matches type thing. And now he's not even gonna get the chance at AEW because he's gonna have NXT stink all over him, and there's no way I think they sign him.
I mean if Tony can get him at a crazy discount, he could basically kind of reboot this gimmick and use WWE as the man. You know what I mean?
No, they're never going to go that far with an angle. They're not big on that type of character-y angle. But it's also
write characters over there.
Not really. But it's also one of those things where. God, I forgot my point here. I had a point and I just lost it all of a sudden with Eddie Thorpe. Oh no, Eddie Thorpe had one of the most. No.
Kind of his
you know
career.
What? No, but man, that angle he did with Ava, where he tricked her into thinking he was jumped so he could get a title shot, is one of the better things they've done in the past 6 months in NXT.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just went to stereotypical racism because I don't know why. I mean, I know why, but I'm not going to say it.
I don't know what you're holding back on. I'll say it. Like, they just didn't have that good of ideas. So I was
going to say that Shawn Michaels goes heavy into the racism sometimes.
Right. Well, yeah, because but at the core of it, it's okay. Especially in the year 2025, running a racist angle to me is just indicative of a weak mind. I mean, obviously it's bad on the merits too, but like, beyond that, it's not just bad or evil, it's dumb.
Gigi Dolan.
Kind of weird. Her partner, you didn't mention Tatum Paxley, did you?
Tatum Paxley has not been confirmed, and I'm figuring that they see Gigi as the Marty, and they see Tatum as the Sean.
I think so. I think Tatum.
The one I'd be worried about, the one I'm actually checking for, is to see if JC Jane got axed, which would just be stupid. But I mean that their team, Fatal Attraction.
Toxic Attraction. No, are they Toxic Attraction? I thought they were Fatal Influence.
I think you're right. I thought Fatal Influence was the current trio with Jason
right.
Jane.
Right. That's
No, I'm
you're
talking
to the Gigi and JC one.
JC team,
with
Mandy Rose.
That was Toxic really Attraction. Yeah.
Yes. No, okay. Yeah, no, they were underrated. It's one of those things where I thought they were doing the right thing, going heavy into the character work on Gigi Dolan and just letting her kind of be a deathmatch wrestler at the same time. AEW probably won't pick her up. She could probably go back to TNA. I think she was there for a while before NXT.
Gigi and
the skateboarding kid. Why am I forgetting? Oh, my brain was fried. That's why I'm not remembering names right now. Darby used to have a thing, and there are some allegations there. So I don't think Gigi would be picked up by Tony and company. Jakara Jackson, I think her main crime is that she's not Lash Legend.
Yeah. It's like she, not only is she not Lash Legend, I think she needed to find a character.
Right. The lollipop and the prop stuff wasn't going to work.
No. It was like, yeah, she was doing prop comedy instead of actually finding a character. And I think there's just a limited shelf life of that. Inside of that Lash tag team, she needed to distinguish herself as the workhorse. And that wouldn't necessarily have been hard because Lash is not a workhorse. Lash is certainly Lash, and no one would ever deny that. And if you tried to, you'd be wrong. But outside of that, there's definitely room for Jakara to distinguish herself.
And I'll ask this. Did Gallus outkick their coverage, or did they underperform?
Which run?
That's just it. I mean, the thing is that hurt them is that they are 5'10", if we're lucky,
right?
Wide as a barn door, and you know they're kind of doing interesting things with the Wolfgang, the Wolfgang and the brothers tension type of thing from time to time. I kind of argued with Joe Lanz on this a bit early in the Gallus run that I kind of liked their theme song. He did not care for it, and I also thought they were perfectly fine in NXT UK. And they come over to NXT, and they really don't do anything with them. They were doing decent character work, like the pool hall stuff in NXT UK with those vignettes and whatnot. I mean, they were solid brawlers. It's just, I think it might have just been a size thing with them, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think that's basically
and they talk funny, possibly.
Right. I mean, they talk funny, and the name is kind of, I don't know, it's kind of a weird name. It's a weird name to American audiences, I think.
I'll keep monitoring the Fightful and the Sean Ross Sapp Twitter pages as we go along, if any other NXT releases, because again, they don't publicize them, but there are supposedly numerous ones in there, so we'll see who they decide to pick up. A little kind of surprises for me that aren't there. Well, no, I shouldn't say that, because that's horrible to speculate on people's jobs and stuff like that. But also, the day before were office cuts, including creative services and photography. One of those axed was Christine Lubrano, who spent more than 4 years as WWE Senior Vice President of Creative Writing Operations. She and Bruce Pritchard oversaw the writing team and reported directly to Paul Levesque. we can't possibly get rid of Bruce Pritchard. 3-4
The man's just kind of a font of wrestling knowledge, Jeff. What do you want?
He's a font of bad ideas, from what I
know. You know, you
before
say
starting
that,
with
but
WWE in 2021, I'm going to talk
over you.
You
don't have a podcast. You don't have a podcast.
Lebrato worked in television with roles at the IFC and Bravo Networks. I remember this hire. She was with IFC for 18 years and had the role of Senior Vice President of Original Programming and Development for the channel from 2014 to 2019. What could she possibly know about television? God. I think this is a fall guy for all the, I mean, it's either a fall guy for all the bad criticism of the build to WrestleMania, or it's TKO cutting costs. It's probably Occam's razor. It's the latter, because TKO doesn't like paying people. This is also why I don't want to quit my job right now to go work for WWE necessarily, because I don't see any job security for somebody who's not, for lack of a better term, Bruce Pritchard, I think, is still possibly a Vince stooge, but who knows? But I mean, people who are in the club.
You don't have a podcast.
I'm not in the club. I don't have a podcast. Nobody listens to this.
Yeah,
except hate listening. People who hate me. Within WWE as well, but nevertheless, also within these cuts, WWE broadcast personality Ryan Papala, he being part of the bump show, where they continually just decide to fire people, even though they do most of the good social media work for this company that's not complete, for lack of a better term, bootlicking. Here's the Raw explainer with, it's not Sam Roberts, it's the other guy that,
oh, Peter
Rosenberg.
Peter Rosen, I dude, that guy
who pays to be on WWE TV apparently.
Does he really?
That's the rumor. But
he does kind of stink. So it's kind of like, why would you give him a check to go on there and just stink it up?
I just remember Bring It to the Table. You remember that show with him and Bradshaw trying to do Pardon the Interruption, but worse.
Yes, but like with like wrestling takes and like semi kayfabe ideas.
Yeah, like JBL being the hot take guy, like he's Stephen A. Smith or something.
Or who's the Skip Bayless?
Yeah, he was Skip Bayless. You know, Rosenberg's supposed to be the intellectual of the crew. I have nothing against Peter Rosenberg. I don't know the guy, but that
I just JBL is the hot takes machine and Rosenberg is the intellectual.
Like Rosenberg either. That's the problem with this thing. It's like,
find me the nearest exit door. Where do I get out?
Oh, and here's replacement co-host Booker T. That'll make it better.
Oh God. even on NXT this week, like Booker T is so atrocious.
I have to watch this thing on mute now. I can't. Vic, my God.
So bad.
Dude, you don't need to bring energy. Energy will find itself. Like, I think Vic and Corey are doing fine. Since they have to deal with this madman in the third chair.
No, I know. He is just an utter lunatic in that third chair.
Going to AEW, it was already known that ROH's Death Before Dishonor pay-per-view would emerge from Philly's 2300 Arena on September 5th. But today, AEW announced a residency at the venue spanning from August 27th through September 11th. The 2300 Arena will host 3 Dynamite episodes and 3 Collisions in addition to Death Before Dishonor. I know Philly's a wrestling town, Chris.
That's what they say.
But a lot of people were driving into Philly for shows. I think maybe those Collisions and maybe the Ring of Honor pay-per-view. Midweek Wednesday, I am somewhat skeptical. I'm sure they'll have a good crowd for maybe that first one. I like the idea of residencies, but I don't like the idea of doing 6 shows in a residency. I like doing maybe a television taping of 3 episodes one night and calling that a residency. But that's just me. I understand today's fan base probably can't sit through 3-hour television tapings without getting bored or amusing themselves. What are your thoughts on this?
I'm kind of with you. I think just the nature of what consumers want now does not lend itself to the residency as an idea. Like, people are just not coming back week after week after week after week. They don't have the money to do that. There's an economics of this, right? You know,
unless you're counting on Philly and Jersey being like the two hotbeds of professional wrestling.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, maybe it'll shake out that Philly and Jersey are the two big winners, yeah, economically speaking, over the next 3 to 4 months. And all these people are flush with cash and can afford to buy residency tickets to a local wrestling show. That could happen. Monkeys could fly out my ass. That could also happen. But I tend to think that this is not how that's going to play out.
Well, AEW is also promoting like $20 tickets for some things as well to juice those numbers. So they are, and this started coming out after the, we talked about this pre-show, the $40,000 package for SummerSlam for 2 nights, front row seats, access to meet and greets, walking out to a Titantron with Wade Barrett. I don't know what it is.
No, I get that. So then, like, let's suppose this company of yours that you have cited decides to run a bundle for the 3 weeks and it's $50 for the 3 weeks. Well, you still have to figure out parking. Well, you still have to figure out food. Well, you still have to figure out X, Y, and Z. And so then those 3 weeks end up costing you probably closer to $250.
Yeah. I don't know. The Texas one was very hit and miss. Like, I remember there were like some nights where they just had a packed house and other nights where that you couldn't, you know, where you could like hear crickets in the thing. And it was mostly the Collision audiences were dead and the Dynamite audiences were hot. And the Ring of Honor was kind of a mixed bag. They had the pay-per-view there. They're trying this. Let's see if it works. WWE announced that the PLE for Australia be named Crown Jewel Perth. It will take Saturday, October 11th, being held at the RAC Arena, which will host 3 WWE events within a 4-day span. SmackDown and Raw are also set for the venue. That's right, kids. The Crown Jewel marketing is coming out of Saudi Arabia.
Finally, a Crown Jewel that I can watch. This is
because,
really exciting.
Because we're having more than just crown jewels in Saudi Arabia because, of course, 2026, the Royal Rumble, a destination pay-per-view in Saudi Arabia. Maybe the Joe Boxer guy will make it there. Who knows? Not even the United Arab Emirates, for God's sakes. It's Saudi Arabia. But they're also doing another pay-per-view there that in the fall, I believe, that's going to be Crown Jewel to, you know, maintain that, but they're kind of shying away from it because, of course, the stink of Crown Jewel with a certain thing of the fan base, I would guess. I think that's why they're doing it. Or
no,
just trying to normalize.
I mean, either they're trying to normalize it because I would be with you, and I might even applaud them quietly trying to shuffle away from what has been a nasty relationship with a nasty country. But I think by giving them one of the big four pay-per-views, you are instead normalizing this relationship and saying, you know, the Saudi relationship's here to stay, and Crown Jewel is one of our pay-per-views that is not going away either. We're normalizing the franchise because it's going to be an international franchise now.
Yeah, looking at TNA, oddly enough, Indy Hartwell made her appearance in Los Angeles this past week. Here's the one that's killing me, though. The wrestler formerly known as Alicia Fox will make her TNA in-ring debut in a Knockouts World title match at Under Siege against Masha Slamovich. What?
Wow.
Okay.
What if Foxy really surprises us in this outing? Like,
look, she is athletic,
play?
Or she was athletic.
I know, she was athletic. What if she's here to play this time?
She was also not the most crisp, technically. And she's been out of the ring for a number. What are we? Okay. That's a carnival-esque slash attraction. Maybe I'll watch it. I don't know. It's interesting, but at the same time, it's also bat guano crazy to me.
No, no, dude, I 100% I get that part. I'm throwing out there as the like dark horse underdog thing. What if the time away, how what's her age currently? Late 30s?
Oh, at least.
Yeah, right? What if she's been doing yoga, flexibility's up, she's worked on a few new moves or whatever, and out of the WWE system, she can do a few more things. You got to remember, she was in the heavily stylized Divas
system. Yeah,
she was
in the Divas era, and now she's going to be a Lutris or something like that.
I'm not saying she's going to go strong style here. I'm just saying that she's going to be able to – look, she is – going off of the memories we have of her working the Divas system, which, I mean, if someone, all you ever remembered them doing was working the Divas system and they came and had what we would currently consider to be a 3.5-star match, you would think that they had been better than ever in that match because all you remembered was the Divas system.
Yeah, that's true. I'm going to sandwich the bad news with something we can mock again, so... three more claims of sexual abuse in the Ring Boys lawsuit, this time bringing back in Pat Patterson as a creep, allegedly, and also including Coco Beware story, where he held a kid against the wall by his genitals, and Tony Chimmel had to put a stop to it. That's kind of disappointing. The Pat Patterson one was getting a boy alone in the room and doing things while other boys were in Mel Phillips' room, which is what most of the amended charges are there for. Janelle Grant amending her lawsuit challenging the challenge against Discovery by WWE and John Laurinaitis et al. Grant's attorney wrote, defendants argue that the court should stay Discovery simply on the basis of a motion to compel arbitration that has not yet been filed. It's basically procedural stuff. Jacqueline Butler Caudle, the wife of longtime Carolinas and Smoky Mountain Wrestling TV announcer Bob Caudle, who is still with us, passed away on April 24th. She was 94. God bless. They were married in 1948 when both had just turned 18, had 76 years together. I'm going to pass over that to mock people who deserve to be mocked. Uh-oh. Let me get the story up.
I thought you were about to go in on Bob Caudle. I was like, damn.
No, Jeff.
Jeff's ice cold today.
I am fearing that day I'm going to have to talk about Bob Caudle, to be honest with you. May he live another 100 years. Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff announced this week that they're going to be involved in a new venture.
Yes.
A professional freestyle wrestling promotion. Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
What is freestyle wrestling?
Oh, it's amateur wrestling, Chris.
I thought like it was like call your own matches wrestling.
No, like high school wrestling. Like Greco-Roman is you only using your upper body.
Okay.
Freestyle wrestling is your Olympic.
Now that you say it in that kind, yes, I'm familiar with that type of wrestling.
Freestyle is like, let's call it in the ring.
Yeah, we're just you and me go in there, have a match. It's kind of it's improv. All right, Jeff, take me up for the suplex. Let's go.
Oh, thank you for that, Chris. No, it's sponsored. The sponsor will be Real American Beer Company, which Hogan is the face of, and he's going to be the public face of this.
I'm going to go for the 450. I'd watch that shit.
Oh, Jesus.
Here
we take,
it is.
We take two pro wrestlers. We'll take...
Pro wrestlers? I just want, like, a guy named Tim versus Luke. And they go out there, and it's Tim versus Luke.
Just two men off the street. It's like bum fights. but it's professional wrestling.
They want to do it. They say they want to do this shit.
We found two kids on the street who are emulating moves. Let's put them in the ring, see if they can tell a coherent story.
No weapons, boys. We just want to see fundamentals.
Winner of the season has to do a match against Dean Malenko in his current state.
And carry him to 3 stars.
And carry him to 3 stars. I think Dean could still do a 3-star match, to be honest with you, even with Parkinson's. Oh, my God. Oh, jeez. They're going to kind of try and sign a bunch of basically washed-up amateur wrestlers, give it some personality. These types of things have, in the past, failed, so to speak. Maybe Gable Stevenson joins up to do this?
Maybe.
So he can cut promos waiting for the next Olympiad? I don't know, but
I have no idea. Yeah.
There is some fool with his money who started listening to Hogan and Bischoff in their next wild scheme to make money. And fools and their money should be soon parted. I can't believe anybody would bankroll those two clowns.
Feel sympathy for them. Yeah.
They did an NWO style video teasing a third man, and it turns out it's the wrestling coach from Greg Jackson's MMA camp. And I thought for certain it was going to be a podcast endeavor with Ric Flair, and Conrad was going to be footing the bill for this thing. And
oh my God.
But no, it's much worse than I expected. All right, that's the news. Let's get out of here. Let's get into our lazy river of wrestling criticism, whatever we watch, whatever we had time for. I'm going to start with something good that was awesome this week. Last week's SmackDown, that TLC tag team match with the Motor City Machine Guns DIY and the Street Profits, if they had put that on WrestleMania where it was originally intended for, we wouldn't be talking about the so-so booking of Travis Scott with what we've been talking about, how these three guys, and especially with the size disparity of the Street Profits vis-a-vis the other two teams, just killed it out there. This match was awesome. This could be put in with your TLC matches of Edge and Christian and the Dudleys and the Hardys. And it was even much safer in my estimation and still was as awesome. I enjoyed the hell out of this. Did you watch this at all?
I did. I've been recording and mixing stuff. No, it was very good. It's been a minute since I did watch it, but SmackDown, I've been tuning into it more recently because it's a nice little extra spot of wrestling at the end of the week. Which I think speaks to my wrestling fatigue being a little bit lower than usual.
Yeah, it does get long-winded. But man, I could listen to Joe Tessitore call wrestling all day.
I think Joe Tessitore's quite good. I agree with you on this.
And he was fantastic on this call. It was almost like he was a kid watching this thing and getting, I mean, he's all the good of what Pat McAfee is without the drawbacks of needing to do the bad comedy at times.
Right. He's just the right level of not fully confident on the mic where he's not doing jokes. You know, when someone gets too confident, they do too many jokes at a job.
They start getting clever. It's a little bit like, I love Morrow, but sometimes he get a little clever with the rap references on there and the cultural references. And Joe is still at his heart a straight ahead play by play guy, because I love watching him on college football. He's just one of the best, especially if it's like a close game late. And I think having Wade, who is like, Wade gets a little too charactery for my taste in terms of the wanting to do the Gorilla Monsoon Bobby Heenan shtick from time to time. But I think when Wade is dialed in and being kind of a serious wrestling commentator, those two might be the best team in WWE right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Cole
for a while, as a matter of fact, in terms of best team they've had in a while. Cause you know, not to like Corey Graves has his moments, and he was especially good doing play by play when he had to be, when he had to kind of fit into that role when they were starting to fire people. But they haven't had a unit like that that I could sit down and listen to for any length of time in a while. And I am a Pat McAfee apologist, as we will hear later on tonight, because I think I love his infectious enthusiasm, but he obviously follows wrestling news sites and stuff like that. So he'll sometimes try and throw in references to those things. And that's when I don't like Pat McAfee.
Yeah. My other knock on McAfee is that he lets the crowd dictate his flow too much. You got to stick to your script to a certain extent, right? He notices
the crowd way too much. Oh, this crowd didn't like that.
Yeah. Oh, and they didn't like that, or they loved that, and I'm going to lean into that even more. And to a certain extent, yeah, you could do that maybe once or twice in a promo, but you can't do it every time. There was a lot of A-B testing that he was doing during that promo there, the one where he's standing on the desk and, you know, talking about why he's got to fight Gunther. That, well, I liked that promo. I didn't think it was perfect either.
I didn't think it was perfect, but I mean, that's going to be my next thing about the promos on Raw. So I'm going to let you get something in here because I've been talking for a long time.
Okay. Let's see here. I did like the finish to Raw here. I think the thing that is very effective about this Heyman and Rollins unit is it is a vehicle to get Braun Breaker over.
Yes.
And I like Braun Breaker in this role. I think it serves everybody. Rollins doesn't need to be having matches all the time. We know what a Rollins match looks like. And I think sort of the unrelenting brutality of Breaker with a world champion as his manager adds to the menace of this faction much more than if they were coming out in regular doing tag team matches together.
I agree with you. I am going to kind of undercut that a little bit with my next thing, because this Raw, the only two promos that were really, really good. I think Sammy's was okay. Don't get me wrong. Were the two guys who aren't full-time wrestlers, really. It was Logan Paul being pure heel, being a jerk, and it was Pat McAfee actually speaking somewhat from the heart, I thought. I hated Seth Rollins' opening promo here. I hated Becky Lynch's promo. They're both, number one, we're presenting both with their music, which still gets the crowd reactions from time to time. Seth Rollins hasn't changed up his gimmick any. He's still playing weirdo cult leader, but this time he has wacky glasses on, as opposed to kind of being dead serious about what he's talking about, because his entire point of this was being dead serious about the quote-unquote future of wrestling. And his gaudy costumes belie the actual point he's trying to build up. This is the time for Armani suit Seth Rollins.
No more chanting.
No more chanting, no more sing-alongs, no more being the visionary type thing. He can be the visionary, but he has to be cool about it. He can't be eccentric about it. And he was trying to pull that off in the latter stage while still wearing a bathrobe, kind of, but with Sammy in at least his demeanor or whatnot, where I'm trying to save you right now. Just go to SmackDown and have the title match. Becky wasn't even more of an abomination of professional wrestling. Because
plan on flying? It's time to upgrade to a real ID. Because in order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a real ID, or you'll need another acceptable form of identification. So don't wait. Find out how to get your real ID at tsa.gov/real ID. That's tsa.gov/real ID. Or visit your local DMV, and then you'll be cleared for takeoff.
Ready to roll into savings? Visit Dave Gill Chevrolet at 4700 East Broad Street in Columbus, your hometown Chevy experts. Right now, take advantage of tariff-busting deals on some of our most popular models. Experience the bold new 2025 Silverado 1500 with its powerful V8 engine and cutting-edge tech. Or discover the all-electric 2025 Chevy Equinox EV for an eco-friendly commute without compromising style or range. Looking for value? Browse our extensive inventory of certified pre-owned vehicles. From sporty coupes to family-friendly SUVs, each rigorously inspected for your peace of mind. Cruise over to Dave Gill Chevrolet or visit us online today at DaveGillChevy.com and drive home happy.
She has her whoa, which gets the cheers. She does the finally the man has come back shtick to get the cheap pop for the city they're in. And then she goes into this promo, which is way, way too insider baseball, about Bailey and the Chris Van Vliet interview that 20% of that audience actually watched. Talking about Bailey wanting to be a bigger star and being upset with pushes and other things like that. And the whole excuse for jumping Lyra was just stupid. And then Lyra comes out and cuts an even worse promo, although it was good for her. I mean, there were parts of the promo I liked, but it was kind of like the, as I was getting hit with your move, not once, not twice, but three times, like all the baby faces on this show. And this goes back to the Cody thing. Are these whiny beta, I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed in the heel type shtick?
It
just makes you look like a wuss.
The week after the heel turn on someone like Lyra Valkyria, she gets turned on by Becky Lynch. Becky comes out, she's puffing up her chest, she's finally the man.
Yes.
All of a sudden,
that
Lyra
is a Becky
Valkyria
promo, by the way.
I'm the man, and everyone respects me. And then out comes Lyra Valkyria with a chair, and she just smacks Becky from behind.
Yes.
She ambushes Becky on week two, because you can still play with who's got the upper hand leading into the match. But week two, I want the babyface strikes back.
I want the babyface to not allow the explanation for why she did it, because it's almost...
I'm actually going to go further. I think it's essential on week two that the babyface strikes back. The heel can't get advantage week one and week two. It makes the intrigue... If we're talking a four-week cycle, it makes the intrigue for the match too little.
And she's playing the absurd person, Becky is, in this straight absurd scene. And she has a decent excuse for why she did all this. That's the other part of this. She did all this because Bailey, when she was a heel, used to jump her. And it's like, no, you need to expound on that to make you look like you're being unreasonable here. And
which also,
didn't.
Oh, by the way, opens up the door perfectly for why Lyra Valkyria should jump Becky. So then when Becky comes out week three and she's like, you know what's total crap? That Lyra Valkyria jumped me last week. When,
yes.
Like, literally week two, she's out there touting the merits of jumping people.
I wanted to hit her with a chair and pull the Brandi Rhodes line. Bitch, who told you it was open mic night?
Right. Week three, Becky Lynch is now out there chanting a new gospel. There's nothing more despicable than attacking someone from behind.
Oh, Becky Lynch should do the whole Ron, the guy from Smoky Mountain, famous guy who was a manager. I'm going to look up his name while I say it and try and get through this, but he comes out and do the whole, I was mortally wounded. She should come out in a body cast. Ron Wright. That's who I was thinking of. Ron Wright, who for the first few weeks of Smoky Mountain is doing this awesome with you, the fans' support. I'm going to find a donor for this thing. I'm going to heal up and I'll be right back. And it turns out the whole wheelchair act is just a fake gimmick. Yeah, to basically manage. I think it was the Dirty White Boy. at the time. Kevin Nash kind of did this with his whole, with the whole cast shtick where he takes off the blanket, he just stands up, gets in the ring and hits somebody. Yeah. And then Becky should be looking for false sympathy in week three as how she is the aggrieved party here because her bad actions are actually, I should be sympathetic right now. And it should just be getting boozy and type, "Ooh, you suck," kind of thing, as opposed to, "Hey, hello, Kansas City. The man is back here to, and now you need to turn on me." Cause the crowds never do that full on, even with like the Alexa, it's the Alexa Bliss promo style where it's like, you know, "I was just a little girl with a dream and I did this and I hate all of you." It was all a swerve, you know, because of a, you know, you're just like, "Oh, you got me there, Alexa Bliss. Woo, really fooled me on that one." Which he always used to do. It used to drive me nuts where it's like, "You're the hottest baby face in the company. And now I have to screw it all for you because, oh, it's all a swerve." It's like, yes, Becky comes out to the giant WrestleMania pop. And the next night it's, "Now you got to boo me, even though I'm going to get that last pop squeezed out of saying the name of the city. Aren't I great?"
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean,
like, and I like Pat McAfee's promo. I mean, there were some moments in there that are kind of like, all right, they're try-hard, but it's like, you know, what, it rhymed with soil. I forget what it was, but I thought that was a clever line. It felt like, to me, it was, "Look, Gunther, you touch my friend, I'm going to kick your ass." And that's all I want out of a wrestling promo. That's all right. I want.
I don't need
the backstory. I don't need the "last week at Backlash, you jumped me from behind." Shut up. Tell me how you feel.
And I think we're all fine with a foregone conclusion match here. Like, McAfee shouldn't win. The intrigue's in the story. And so for McAfee to lean into the, this is not victory for me. The conditions for victory for me are going to be, when I'm done, do you all think I fought hard?
Oh, and he's gonna get the crap.
This match might out be, of him. If this match gets to go like 10 minutes and he gets some cool spots, this could be a real banger, right? Like,
this match is good.
He could sell. I think he's gonna sell his ass off.
He could do the jump onto the top rope and do a hurricanrana onto Gunther and just pop the crowd or whatever.
Yes, right. No, his comebacks are gonna kick ass, and I think if he really sells the fear, the peril, and the emotional aspect of this match, this is one where he and Gunther could really come up with some real chemistry here.
There's a moment in there that I would tease where Pat McAfee realizes he's out of his depth, but I have to go in there for the honor of Michael Cole type of thing. I don't know if they can pull that off. But if they could, they could actually have some pathos to this match also.
I mean, you certainly could have the Chekhov's gun here of McAfee makes a pivotal decision mid-match to save Michael Cole, and that's what costs him. That's what turns the tables of the match.
Like, McAfee's down, and then Gunther goes after Michael Cole while he's calling this match.
Yeah, Gunther's desperate enough that he because Michael Cole's going to get into it. I think we're starting to unpack the story, right? Cole's been saying he should be able to be more partisan. He should be able to have opinions on the microphone, everything like that. I think,
and he gets super partisan during this match.
He's going to get really right, exactly. Yeah. And we've established now that like you can hear, we can definitely hear commentary. The wrestlers do hear commentary. And McAfee comes in. Yeah, McAfee comes in for the save. I think that can make for a really poignant moment here. Especially if McAfee has some nice comeback moments during the course of this match too.
I'm gonna throw this out here real quick because I forgot to do it when we were talking about the cuts and whatnot. AEW needs to hire Cora Jade for one night and do twin magic with her and Sky Blue.
Oh yeah,
I don't think if
Cora Jade joined the AEW roster, she's like,
I'd have no problem with that. She might be
right. She's firmly in the middle of the pack.
She's firmly, yeah. It might even go possibly upper tier. Yeah. It's your turn, sir, on this
thing. All right. So then I guess we can take it over to NXT. This Trick Williams heel turn stinks. I think that he somehow has less personality now as a heel than he did as a babyface, and he didn't have a ton of personality to begin with. But
showed up last night on TNA, by the way, the live TNA that they shot from Irvine, California. And took out Joe Hendry during a match.
Okay.
Yes, it stinks because he's not cutting a heel promo. He's cutting the I was screwed promo.
Yeah, and also, like, I'm big time. Like, it's not.
Yeah, he's Hollywood Trick Williams now.
Right, but it's not grating enough, and it's not nearly like I'm above this. And, like, he never sort of says the sort of the thing you'd have to say, which is I'm a bigger star than Obafemi. It doesn't matter if I have the belt or not. I'm a bigger star than Obafemi. And basically,
I have the potential to, you know, it's a meta gimmick.
Yeah.
And that's the problem here. And he's going at it as a 7 and not as an 11.
Yeah.
Level.
And then but the Oba presentation where he's rubbing elbows with the Undertaker constantly doesn't help. It doesn't help Trick Williams too in the margins, because, like, yes, you know, if he is, he's Hollywood Trick, but this makes him seem really Bush League, and this really needs to be his transitional gimmick to the main roster. And if anything, this feels like we are losing interest in this toy sort of situation.
You know what's even worse about it, now that I think about it? It is what Carmelo Hayes has become to Miz.
Yeah. God.
And that would, I mean, you're saying it's a transition to the main roster. He comes in and he's bootleg Miz and bootleg Carmelo at the same time.
God. I mean, it wouldn't actually surprise me if they were reunited as Miz's henchmen.
But what you're saying is true. You can't go to Obafemi and go, I'm a bigger star, when you can't beat Obafemi. What are you going to do? Say, I move more merchandise, more people want to see me. You're basically being the flake heel that Ethan Page is then. And Ethan Page does this better than anybody on that roster right now.
I mean, that's honestly a great observation, that Trick Williams is basically just morphed into Ethan Page. They actually should maybe. Okay. This could save the gimmick. Williams comes out. No, hear me out.
Okay.
Because I think this might actually give Williams
sell
a
me.
Bit of.
Sell me. I want to hear it.
Williams comes out. He begins his bitching promo. And out comes Ethan Page, who tells Williams to shut up. And then they both start complaining and realize that they are basically complaining about the same shit.
And they do the Spider-Man meme where they point at each other.
Yes, because this gives Trick Williams someone new with actual personality to play off of, so that it's his personality is more than him just saying, let's talk about it after the thing he's already talked about.
You know what?
And then never actually saying anything else. Jeff, he does this all the time in these promos. I'm going to be in a big movie. Let's talk about it. You know, I'm about to have a match against Obafemi. Let's talk about it. You know, I really want to eat some tacos. Let's talk about it. He never actually follows up what the topic. He just brings
I want to do some freestyle wrestling. Let's talk about
let's talk about the freestyle wrestling. I need to go now.
I'm liking this idea more and more. If it morphs into kind of a more high-end version of Men of the Year that Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky did.
Yeah.
And maybe you bring in Dan Lambert for this as well. That would be something for me.
Right. I think we just need to move Trick away from.
Yes.
Whatever this character is,
it's one note.
It's one note, and it's largely his outfits. It's like he is essentially doing like a Buffalo Exchange Seth Rollins with a little bit more, where we wear ostentatious outfits that are weird, that no normal human wears, and that if any of your friends started wearing, you would think they were an asshole. And he just kind of comes out there and does his, you know, let's talk about it. I'm wearing these leather pants. Let's talk about it.
See, to me, it looks like he's doing the Stone Cold Undertaker wardrobe of just, you know, I'm wearing a vest and it's either denim or leather, and that makes me cool.
Well, some weeks, but then other weeks there's other stuff going on.
I'm trying to remember the eccentric stuff in there, and I'm not. It's not like you went Kyle Fletcher with like the glasses with the beads on it and stuff.
Sad we are that he did not go Kyle Fletcher.
No, but I'm saying if you're gonna go eccentric Hollywood.
Oh, I agree. But
maybe not all the way Hollywood, like Dan Schneider or something. But yes.
Yeah.
Let's move on from that horrible reference that Jeff just made.
That's the foot guy, right?
Yes. Among other things.
I mean, like he
allegedly,
did other
things. Allegedly.
No, he definitely put a lot of foots on Nickelodeon television.
Yes, he did.
Yeah,
and just to kind of circle back on NXT/Raw, I hate, and also maybe Katana Chance and Caden Carter a little bit, and Alexa Bliss, who has been previously mentioned on this show. I hate, with a capital H, that undersized women who are perhaps technically sound, perhaps athletic, perhaps whatever they're bringing to the table, must be heels because we don't believe they can be ass kickers. And this is exactly the slot that Roxanne Perez is falling into right now. And to me, this is burning money. She's the most straight ahead babyface you had on this NXT roster at one time. The Prodigy. I'm cute. Look at me. Root for me. And then we got to see if she has range. So we make her a heel. And then we never can figure out how to get her out of this heel character. This is what they did with Bayley as well.
Oh, well, I that's where I was going to go, which is that I feel like maybe no, you're fine. I feel like maybe the undercurrent here, especially when you're looking at Cora Jade too, Bayley's lost a little bit of suction with kind of the office on some of these people, because I think if Bayley had more stroke, we would be presenting Roxanne in a more connecting way. I mean, it's not even about her being babyface or heel, though she should be babyface. If you're gonna make her a heel, she's gotta have a gimmick that really gets over. And right now, she just comes out and like
cocky. She's
makes
cocky.
A little,
that's her
she
thing.
Makes a little face at the crowd. Me.
I want to hear your cheer. Yeah, whatever. You know, that kind
of thing. Yeah, whatever.
You know who it is? It's Deonna Purrazzo.
Yeah. Me. All right. So, like, that's not really, again, a one note song. And
how about I'm small and I'll break your leg, Rhea Ripley?
Right. and then you have to have her do it.
Yes.
Right, like you actually have to have her and Rhea have a match, and it goes to ref stoppage because Roxanne has done too much damage to Rhea's leg, and the refs, Rhea wants to continue so she doesn't look weak, but the refs stop her from continuing, and that starts an injury angle, and you can
and
have
Roxanne. Yeah, they kind of teased it with the dive at the knee at the end of the match, but right now she's there to help heat up Julia as the main attraction.
Right. Which.
Which is fine. Julia's kind of acting, you know, again, it's the aloof character and you're just kind of.
Yeah, no, I guess it'd be fine if the Julia character was more put together, but right now it's kind of not.
She's a catchphrase. She's the beautiful madness. Okay.
Right.
So she's cray cray.
And she didn't even get to say her own catchphrase. So that gives her even less of a promo than Let's Talk About It.
That said, Stephanie McCurr, money. Absolute money.
Man.
On both rosters.
She's a star. I feel like she gets more comfortable with promos as time goes on. And
she just has that awesome like veneer of, you know, kind of like having the one arched eyebrow and I'm confident in whatever the hell I'm doing right now. And you
the
ain't
spotlight's
gonna stop
me. Not too big for her, right?
Right.
Yeah, you know, she very much just feels like a person who has decided that this is their moment, and they're going to go get it. It has nothing to do with belts or whatever. It's that every single time she's out there, she wants to have a really good match where she looks really sharp. Liv Morgan, for her part on the show this week, I thought she was better too.
she's leaving for a while to do a movie, and I didn't report because, like, God, this is one of those things that got overhyped, and it was so disappointing to me that I didn't want to report it. She's doing Bad Lieutenant Tokyo, and it was teased as, oh, this is a major film project, and people are going to be very shocked that she, like, it's not that big of a project. I was thinking, like, a Star Wars project. That's how big
this thing is. Not everything can be the Marine 2, Jeff.
No, but this is getting hyped by quote-unquote Hollywood insiders with some knowledge of the product. And I'm just like, you're on crack, you people.
You call yourself a Hollywood insider with some
I actually know some things about Hollywood, and I know that Bad Lieutenant Tokyo
and doing possibly
world-building on the Bad Lieutenant expanded universe of Harvey Keitel and Nicolas Cage.
Mm. You know? We're world-building.
We're world building, and now we're gonna have a Bad Lieutenant multiverse. That's
thank God.
I used to have that Bad Lieutenant poster in my parent because I was going
say multiverse, are we splitting the Bad Lieutenant timeline so that there's a Lieutenant timeline, Alpha Lieutenant timeline? Like,
well, Gamma? we have the Abel Ferrara Harvey Keitel timeline, then we have the Nicolas Cage, Val Kilmer. Bad Lieutenant New Orleans Port of Call or whatever the hell that might be Earth 2.
Okay.
Bad Lieutenant. And then we'll have Bad Lieutenant Tokyo starring a guy I've never heard of who's from that
country. Liv Morgan. Right. She's in the movie too.
That could be Earth 3. And then we have Crisis on Infinite Bad Lieutenant Earths where we bring them all together. And the Bad Lieutenants.
Like a Dirty Dozen sort of thing, or like a Star Trek Generations thing, if you're more into that, where they bring Kirk and Picard together.
I was thinking the actual Crisis on Infinite Earths, where it's like Superman and Superman get together, except it's Bad Lieutenant, so we get like dirty cops on the take trying to save this horrible storyline that Hawkins has come up with. No. Oh. Your turn.
What if they fight dinosaurs in the last movie?
What if they do freestyle wrestling?
What if the Bad Lieutenant universe had more freestyle wrestling in it?
Yeah, and have Abel Ferrara do it. I think he's dead, but I don't know.
Well, that doesn't necessarily stop him with the power of AI.
It might make a better movie. We'll have AI Abel Ferrara.
AI Abel Ferrara. I kind of, for what it was, I kind of enjoyed Hank and Tank and Briggs and Yoshiki Inamura. I really like Inamura. I think that Hank and Tank continue to do what they do at a very high intensity. It's not that they're good per se. It's that they're fully committed to doing what they do as well as they can do it. And there's really something to be said for that and seeing that level of effort in the ring. But Inamura, to me, just continues to stand out as a guy where I'm like, man, WWE, you should get an extension on this guy's contract and put him in like a 6 month or even 1 year deal where you just have him inserted into like a mid-card feud. Have this guy show up in the mid-card feud with LA Knight and just start making his way through all those kind of guys until he procures the Intercontinental title or something at the end of it. He seems to me to be like a perfect monster heel. The build up to a WrestleMania for a quick mid card title change sort of thing. I love this guy.
I enjoyed Kyle Fletcher and Hangman over on AEW. I thought this was a really, really strong showing in terms of booking. They let Kyle Fletcher cut a heel promo prior to the match. I thought that was great.
Yeah, and it's good to know who's a heel and who's a face going into the match, I say.
I'm liking this
iteration. I like that in my wrestling. I think that's good.
Yeah, I know. Well, we'll get to this in a second because that also involves the All-Star 8-Man. But it's like I'm liking this iteration of the Callis family that acts as a unit a little bit more. Unfortunately, they're not the Death Riders, so they're not necessarily the top team. But it was fun watching the sports-based presentation. We just want bangers crowd do their pretzel logic on the All-Star 8-Man spots that were comedy spots out of the Bucks and Omega and Ricochet and whatnot. And finally coming around to the Jeff Hawkins school of Sometimes professional wrestling needs to be unrepentantly stupid. Type line. I'm not sure if you want to do it with this level of guy. I mean, Ricochet is still kind of a comedy guy, but you had been freshening him up as kind of a main event heel. And I get that. But yes, you need promos. You need personality. You need something other than bangers to get your wrestling product out there.
Yeah, I did not and mind. To get certain people over and get people fully engaged in the match. You know, my problem with Fletcher has been, okay, so like he changes how he dressed, and I'm sure we all have thoughts about that, but like that's not a character. It's the Trick Williams thing.
A little bit. The eight man, it's kind of a, this is a PWG night three, Ebola, do a thumb up the ass spot that used to happen all the time. And everybody, oh, that was great. It was so hilarious type of a thing. But just watching, you know, the same kind of people would complain that Toru Yano being in the G1 ruined the purity of the tournament type thing. Watching them explain that, oh, some of these spots are decades old and they happened in the 70s too, et cetera, et cetera. I'm like, yes, Dave Meltzer, please tell me more about these things. While saying it was maintaining the purity of your star rating professional wrestling or whatever. I'm just kind of like, I'm only going after the hardcore tribalists here who get in my mentions about praising WWE and criticizing AEW occasionally. But it was just interesting to watch. I didn't mind it. I thought this match went on far too long for its own good. Not the Fletcher Hangman, but the eight-man all-star where we're just doing every spot that we can think of known to man that's creative. Like, yeah. Don't get me wrong. I love the Mike Bailey Young Bucks blocking the kicks and interlocking spot. Do we have to do it 3 weeks in a row? No, let's save it for another time when it's more important.
You know,
it was a fun match. I mean, it went for 30 minutes almost. I'm just like, my God.
Right. I mean, and for me, it's just always a case of, why are we doing these matches? I don't know. Like,
well, the why was kind of belittled because it was like, and they kind of mentioned it on commentary, but they didn't sell it. The first confrontation between Kenny and Okada, they did it in the beginning of the match a little bit. They did one spot. I mean, it was the right amount of teasing and stuff. I just felt because it was kind of announced with little build, like if they had announced this and done like 2 weeks worth of build for, this is the first time you're going to see Omega and Okada throw hands and do a video package. And Tony hates video packages because he's afraid people are tuning out and he thinks the crowd will get bored by it too, which is ridiculous to me. And
I know the irony is,
it's fundamental pro wrestling to do hype packages for shit you're going to show 2 weeks later. It really
is.
Well,
yeah, and a thing that honestly would get me more into a Hangman Kyle Fletcher match is any sort of reason for this happening.
Well, the Owen. It's the prestigious Owen Hart tournament to see who...
The tournaments... There are so many belts in this company that the tournaments don't mean anything.
Did you know that Kenny and Okada are both belt holders in AEW? That's
dude,
why this is important.
So is Nick Wayne, and so is every person that I saw on the show. And I'm pretty sure that if I got hired there, I could be the Chris Novembrino continuing champion of excellence if I wanted to be. But it's tedious. It's tedious.
Yes, I agree. Your turn, sir.
Why is it always my turn? Why is it never your turn?
Because I go on long about my points and I give you time to think of stuff.
Well, whatever. I mean, I think of stuff too. I talked about Kyle Fletcher. Okay, so then...
MJF working for you still? Let's ask that question if you're trying to think of stuff.
I almost went MJF next because, like, I mean, what am I going to do? Talk long? You know, what am I supposed to do, Jeff? You want 10 minutes on Carmen Petrovic finally dumping Ashanti the Adonis?
I'm waiting for his cut to be part
yeah,
of these
no,
things.
But because... do not answer that phone, my friend. Be like JTG.
Oh, my God. I mean, because, like, that NXT felt like we're breaking up a bunch of groups and the cuts are coming this week.
Oh, yeah.
The metaphor is breaking up. I'm Aura Mensa. I don't answer that phone either.
No. Well, I mean, at least, I mean, yeah, maybe because like
Gallus just got cut. The NXT UK people, other than, you know, pretty deadly, are kind of going out the window.
No joke. You know, I think MJF and the Hurt Business, I'm increasingly thinking that the move here, especially considering where this company's main event scene is and the fact that the Hurt Business just can't seem to rub knuckles with anyone who's worth a shit, I think that MJF has to turn the Hurt Business babyface de facto so that they can feud against the Death Riders and MJF and people of that ilk. I think it's the most interesting thing this company can do in the short term.
That's interesting because it's one of those things that I look at it as a good idea, but it has to wait for later. But I've seen pitched that the way Bobby Lashley just told MJF he has to go hurt somebody. And to me, this means probably like Brandon Cutler or something like that. But the movier would be MJF to hurt Bobby Lashley to get into the Hurt Syndicate. And for that to be an underlying bit of tension. Because eventually Bobby Lashley has to go, well, you did hurt me, but I'm going to get my revenge at some point type of thing. Or MJF to know, or he hurts some geek, gets into the Hurt Syndicate, and at some point turns on Bobby Lashley to hurt him. Right? The ending is in the beginning, and if the beginning is
right.
You have to hurt somebody in the Hurt Syndicate, and you'd think it's Bobby Lashley, but maybe it's MVP, the guy who liked him, because that was the guy who was out first. You know, it's one of those conundrums where it's like you have to give MJF a certain edge to him that we've wanted since he's been in this company. And since the only time he really had it was when he turned on Cody Rhodes to establish himself as a heel. And every time he's been a heel since, he's just been kind of goofy play acting heel. Like when he was the devil and stuff, like, ooh, look at me, I'm so evil, blah, blah, blah. But now he actually has to be kind of evil. And you don't know if he can pull that off or not.
Yeah. Right. Like, I don't know. There's a number of, he could be a setup for the Hurt Business, that the Hurt Business basically sent MJF out there. You know, but he struck a deal with the Hurt Business. I'm sorry, not the Hurt, the Death Riders.
Death Riders?
Yeah. And he basically is setting up the Hurt Business because they have the titles and stuff. Like they do. I mean, the motivation's there on that. You could, I don't think MJF kicking out MVP does that faction any good.
Not kicking him out, but being the one to hurt him.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, that could be good in the sense that then that gives the Hurt Business reason down the line to turn on MJF. So that they would have a good reason to do that in the future. You know, like, well, okay, so MJF is, you know, MJF did this to us, ipso facto, you know.
Right, eventually.
Yeah. Right.
The time comes. Yeah, that's all I got. Do you have anything else?
I don't. Cody Rhodes needs to find his footing in this new post-Mania thing. John Cena still stinks for me.
I think he's going away for a while and they're just going to concentrate on this Randy stuff.
Yeah. John Cena stinks for me.
That promo, you need to go have kids. Now look, I know Randy would have wanted, you need to go get laid. That's pretty much what he should.
No,
have said.
I know. And like bluntly, why does it matter that you substitute that? Well, cause like, okay,
there's a different story they're telling.
There's a different story there, and like also, you know, like Cena's pushing 50, so if he had kids now, like they'd be like, I mean, the window probably has closed for John, even if biologically he can still have kids. Like, you know, like it's stupid. Like, hey, just say what you're trying to say.
Want to go on to Vader Club?
Oh yeah, sure do. Tell us about this match this week here, Jeffrey.
Well, as I was. was just scrolling through All Japan and looking for a Steve Dr. Death Williams. I was actually looking for Williams and Gordy. And, you know, I mean, everybody's kind of watched the WCW matches. There are still some within the All Japan catalog to do, but this was a rather deep and interesting cut. And the more I watched it, the more intrigued, especially by All Japan Ray trailer that I could get here. So yes, Kobashi and Misawa versus the Big Boss Man. And this is trailer after he gets kind of released from WWE. Still using the branding because he had permission or something. And he was using it also in Smoky Mountain for a while and kind of deciding where he wanted to go. If he wanted to go back to WWE and he'd eventually go back to WCW as the Boss. If you remember that terrible gimmick as the Hell's Angel gimmick,
the Guardian. The Guardian Angel. There's the Guardian Angel. And then there's also Big Bubba.
Well, Big Bubba was his prior life.
But then he reset it back to that.
Yeah, he reset it back. And then he went back as like the SWAT guy, Big Boss Man, which is great. I like the Big Bubba.
That's later. I like the SWAT Boss Man.
I like SWAT Boss and I like Big Bubba. Because Big Bubba was the first real guy in the 80s I saw wrestling in a suit type of thing, being, you know, kind of that Mr. Hughes, Secret Service, Jack Victory, to later become, what's the name of the psychotic guy from Ring of Honor who dresses Hitman all the time? Bald guy, season 2 of NXT winner.
Slapjack?
No. Former, the really intense guy who took himself way too seriously in Ring of Honor.
Oh, Leo Kruger.
No. I'll look it up. Give me a sec here. ROH champions. People are screaming at their listening device.
You sure it's not Slapjack?
Slapjack, I don't believe ever won his title. Well, oh, Low Key.
That
dude. Yeah. But there is some weird stuff going on in this match, Chris, that I just had to comment on. Some good old school, some Steve Williams just absolutely off his rocker and into the good Peruvian marching powder, I think. Like, I believe the Kobashi palm slaps, where he's like hitting guys in the head with palm strikes. That was interesting. Steve Dr. Death Williams pulls out a Muda handspring something or other in this match.
Him getting vertical like that was
something else. And the thing that absolutely made me lose my stuff when I'm watching it, he and Trailer, like, Boss Man's awesome in this match. He comes in as a heavy and he's playing All Japan big wrestler in this, but still, like, doing all of the, like, the Ray Trailer story is just fascinating because Dusty gets faith in him when he does a squash match with Tully Blanchard and he goes up for the slingshot suplex really easy. So after that, Dusty goes, we got to find something for this guy to do. So they package him as Big Bubba Rogers and then he sends him everywhere. He sends him to Central States. He sends him to another NWA territory. And he sends him to UWF when Crockett takes over them to basically be their first champion out there because he sees so much in this guy. But here he's doing the athletic Boss Man stuff before he gets into the three moves of doom, sliding under the rope and doing the uppercut type of thing. Trailer is moving here and doing some stuff, but he and Dr. Death do this double Oklahoma stampede where they're in tandem of something. Did you see this?
Yeah.
Like, they're one behind the other doing an Oklahoma stampede. I go, what the hell is that? But
dude,
this Japanese
Williams
crowd
is
popped
moving
for it.
So fast throughout all of this match. It's actually like
insane. He's a crazy
insane
man in this match.
It's insane. It's and it's like 20 minute 20. He's moving just as fast as he was around like the 15 minute mark.
And Misawa Kobashi and Dr. Death at certain points in this match just decide, screw it, we're gonna throw each other all over the place.
Dude,
guys,
dude,
are landing
that,
on their
that
heads.
That back suplex.
Yes.
That back suplex that Steve Williams does. Oh, just because
he doesn't care. He's just throwing these guys up, and if they have a complaint, they can throw me on my neck. right, and see what happens.
Yeah. I'm feeling no pain.
Good. I mean, God,
dude,
this man.
Dude, that Northern Lights off of the top, I guess you'd call it.
Yes. I almost forgot about that.
Yeah, I don't know.
And this mat has no give. This mat is like the old school.
There's a reason you don't see that move a lot, kids. There's a reason.
And he looked like he didn't enjoy it either when they landed. Dude, I mean, they both landed.
Dude, that was chaos. That was chaos. And like, then we followed up with the Ray Trailer sick uppercut into the back suplex spot, which looks awesome. Looks awesome. Also reckless. But God, I love the uppercut into the back suplex. What a great little spot.
What do you want to do tonight? Let's all just beat the crap out of each other. All right. Sounds good to me.
But like, man, just the creativity.
Yes.
The creativity from Trailer.
I think that's what got me is the creativity of everybody in this match and going, I would have never thought of that spot. And I probably would have never taken that spot in a million years. But here we are doing Northern Lights off the top rope. Double Oklahoma Stampedes.
Dude, that Northern Light.
I screamed the first time
I saw it. So crazy. It's
Dr. Death doing it. And you know,
it's basically like a back body drop off of the top rope more than a Northern Light suplex. You can't like arch or anything and ensure the. So you're just like sack of shit tossing them off the top.
But go back and watch that spot and watch how much the mat doesn't give. For that thing. Like, that is on two stacks of plywood, I think, with a microphone.
I don't believe they go back to the top ropes after that spot either.
No, but I mean, like, Masao will do these moves where he falls out between the ropes onto his head, onto the mat and stuff. And just, what? Kobashi kind of the same. And then they're doing those belly to backs on the floor out there with, like, those little eighth grade gym mats covering the floor. And, like, are you guys absolutely nuts?
And Trailer's amped up too, because after that Northern Lights spot,
he's job hunting here. Yeah,
no, he's going for a body splash, and he's not actually the legal man, and Steve has to be like, get out.
Yes. Oh, they're doing double team moves all over the place. I mean, they make for a pretty decent Haas team. This 93 short run of Big Boss Man in all Japan.
Him and Williams are an unbelievably enjoyable tag team together because you have two big dudes, but some variance in the style from like the wrestling athletics to the brawly sort of thing. And like Boss Man, sneaky, big mobility, and Steve Williams, sneaky athleticism.
Yeah. The working boots are on here, man.
Yeah.
They're just going and they're trying to put on a show for this crowd. And I think they're trying to get Ray Trailer a job. Is that what felt? Yeah. It's on Handycam. If you watch it on there, I don't think there's any official video of this, but trust me, the
Handycam's worth. Yeah. The Handycam will get you there.
Yeah. And I posted this on both the Shake Them Ropes and the Discord, but you can find it just by doing a basic Google search. Sometimes this will list it as Big Bubba Rogers. It is not Big Bubba Rogers. It is the Boss Man. Cause he has not changed his costume from WWE. This would be called gimmick infringement and copyright infringement to the point where today's WWE would be suing him, but here they didn't care. They didn't give a damn because he's washed or whatever. It's like, nope, he still got some life in him. And I truly enjoyed this match. Chris will pick a match for next week and I will be in better spirits, although this show got me in better spirits, so thank you, Chris. Freestyle wrestling.
A little bit of freestyle wrestling here.
Freestyle wrestling.
So I'm gonna hit the ropes real quickly. You're gonna come out of the turnbuckle and I just want you to shoulder block me around the head area.
Let me just get my plugs in. I'm at Crap Game 13 on X. When I'm not having anaphylactic seizures on those Wednesdays, I do a show called The Dynamite Show on Fight Game Media. About 20 minutes after, if I am lucid, I'll do a thorough deconstruction of that week's Dynamite with Wrestling Observer's Paul Ace Fontaine. It drops in your audio pod catchers the next day for free. Just random jokes, and I'm keeping an eye. There were no new NXT cuts, so follow me on Twitter, X. You can just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. Chris also has plugs, and he's going to shill some stuff for you.
Yeah, go and learn music lessons from me on Instagram. My name is Dr. Nov, DOCTOR_NOV. You can message me on there. You can email me if you are so moved. Album coming out this summer. Almost all of the music is done. Actually, by like the end of this weekend, the music will be done. By a couple of weeks from now, the vocals will all be done. Singing takes a little bit longer, Jeff.
Two weeks.
Because I was laughing at.
It's like, oh, I'll be done in a bit. And I go, I know what that means. I mean, 6 months of post-production.
I'm really getting it good.
I'm not faulting you for it.
It goes into production hell by the end of May.
Okay.
It's out of my lap and fully into the producers into the producer's lap in production hell. No, the songs are done. It goes over to California, and then it will take however long it takes on that end. But I will have nothing more to do by month's end here, which is exciting.
Except more new music and more lessons that people should take.
Well, yeah, right. Support. And you should do that. And the music's original and it'll be up on Spotify. And if you're not listening to my music on Spotify now, you could. That's
you
the thing
a
you could do.
Series coming up by any different guitarist for the summer because summer camps are coming up.
Yeah, I do. I'm going to be doing a songwriting thing. I got to put out my actual like syllabus for this and just kind of double check my schedule here. But I'll be making an announcement on that here soon. And actually, I'll be teaching a little class here on freestyle wrestling. In my backyard here, we are going to be doing a little bit of freestyle wrestling. I like All Japan, but one of the, I think, a sustaining criticism of a lot of the wrestling of that vintage from Japan is it was a bit squishy, a little soft around the edges. So over here at Nov Wrestling, not even a federation, it's just Nov Wrestling. I think federations limit things, and I'm instead trying to encapsulate the entirety of the concept here. We don't use the mat. We use a bed of rocks for our freestyle wrestling here. I think this makes it more real. I think it makes it more poignant. And I think you can really hear the crunch of the rocks. When that brain buster happens, you know it means something. We don't use weapons. The entire earth is a weapon if you really think about it.
Best plugs ever. We're out.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture, and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.
Plan on flying? In order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a real ID. Learn how to get your real ID today at tsa.gov/real ID or visit your local DMV.
Ready to roll into savings? Visit Dave Gill Chevrolet at 4700 East Broad Street in Columbus, your hometown Chevy experts. Right now, take advantage of tariff-busting deals on some of our most popular models. Experience the bold new 2025 Silverado 1500 with its powerful V8 engine and cutting-edge tech. Or discover the all-electric 2025 Chevy Equinox EV for an eco-friendly commute without compromising style or range. Looking for value? Browse our extensive inventory of certified pre-owned vehicles. From sporty coupes to family-friendly SUVs, each rigorously inspected for your peace of mind. Cruise over to Dave Gill Chevrolet or visit us online today at DaveGillChevy.com and drive home happy.